Welcome to this special edition of the Church of England Weekly Podcast. In the news this week, the Church of England has launched a new website, inviting churches, schools, communities and individuals to join in a 200-mile pilgrimage to Paris this November. And as a new blog from the Bishop of Ely highlights the early successes of the new training programme for senior leaders in the church, we speak to Bishop Stephen Conway about first fruits and the impact upon him of a recent visit to Rwanda. First, we hear about the Pilgrimage to Paris campaign that's been launched by the church this week, ahead of climate change talks in December. The Bishop of Salisbury and Lead Bishop for the Environment, Nick Holtham, spoke about why Christians should take part in the newly announced pilgrimage.
I think it's really important we join the journey, and we could do it in all sorts of ways, either by physically joining the pilgrims going to Paris. That's a witness to the wider world that this matters to Christians. It will encourage and strengthen those taking part in the climate change talks. It'll also change us. Pilgrimages change us. That's what it's really about. That's where we start, isn't it, with a spirituality that is about our own lives and commitments. So that's a good reason for joining the journey to Paris. But you can join it in other ways too. You could pray in your own church. You could gather people to support and pray people in your own communities. That would be a terrific witness in your parish, your community, praying together for this.
And why is Paris the destination for this particular pilgrimage?
Because the UN Climate Change Summit is taking place in Paris from the end of November through the first couple of weeks in December. And a large number of people are going to be gathering there. And it's really important. This is one of the big issues facing us as a world. Perhaps it's the big issue that faces us as a world. And therefore, for our politicians and diplomats to gather on this topic, for others to strengthen and support them, to encourage them, to push them a bit as well. Actually, it's really important that we get some fair, accountable, firm commitments which will change the way we are and move us towards a low-carbon economy.
And so how important is it for the church, for Christians, to take seriously the threat of climate change?
Well, it's one of the marks of mission, that we care for the earth that God has given us. And the science is very compelling about this. There is a level of uncertainty, but it's about as uncertain as smoking causing cancer. The scientists have pretty much come up with a view of climate change which says people are causing climate change at the moment. And this is new in the earth's history. And therefore we need to be careful about how we use carbon, which has been a great gift. The fossil fuels have really transformed our lives, but we now need to move off them and to a low carbon economy if we're serious about caring for the earth, because temperature's increasing in such a way that climate's changing and it is affecting the poorest most. So we have a responsibility to the poor, we have a responsibility for the care of creation, and we have a responsibility to one another and the stewardship of God's creation.
Details about the pilgrimage to Paris are available now on the website pilgrimage2paris, that's using the number 2.org.uk. The Bishop of Ely, Stephen Conway, has published the first in a series of posts on the Church of England's communications blog, looking at the initial impact of the new training programme that's been developed for senior leaders in the church. We asked him about his blog, but began by asking him about a recent diocesan trip to Kigali in Rwanda and the continuing impact of the genocide that took place 21 years ago. So we're joined by the Bishop of Ely, the Right Reverend Stephen Conway. Bishop Stephen, you've just returned from a trip to Rwanda. Why were you there?
We were there, a team of us were there to further build the link, the diocesan link between Ely and Kigali. It was an opportunity to form an Anglican communion link, which we hadn't had before, and very eager to do that with Bishop Louis and his people in Kigali.
You say that trip came, I think, back after a visit from Bishop Louis to Ely last year.
Yes, Bishop Louis and a team from Kigali came to stay with me in October last year, and we, in the cathedral, formally entered into a partnership which would be reciprocal, about sharing ideas, our prayers, our people and human resources to serve mission more effectively in both places, and for this to be a real partnership where we'll be accountable to each other. So it's really exciting. And we were there this time to go through the same process in St. Etienne's Cathedral in Kigali, where we also stayed in their guest house. And the hospitality was marvellous. And the worship was extraordinary. I'm not used to doing 5 hours of church on the trot, but it was great. And both the service in English and a service in Kiranda, the local language, even in the worship, was expressing the desire for continued working for peace and reconciliation. Even one of the choirs, a Sound of Trumpets choir, was founded in 1997 to bring people together after the genocide from 21 years ago. So it was a really powerful experience for us.
You mentioned the genocide. Of course, that's something that retains powerful echoes.
It does.
Throughout Rwanda.
Yes.
You preached on this at St. Etienne's Cathedral. What was it that you had to say?
What I wanted to convey, and this is, I think, very important in any link between English and English diocese and a diocese in the Global South, that this is a mutually learning relationship. And sometimes our brothers think that they've got nothing to teach us. But actually, we were specifically going to Rwanda, and I preached about Luke 10, where Jesus sends out the 70 to be people where people will listen to proclaim peace, God's peace. And we were there, I specifically said that we were there to learn from God's people in Rwanda how better to be people of peace. Because they have, since the reconstruction, based on the principles of Christian forgiveness, the reconstruction in the last 21 years has been remarkable. And it's a huge statement about not being people defined by death and hatred, but about being people who are committed to love and peace and hope.
You talk about reconciliation. There's a particular story, I think, that you heard while you were over there about an archdeacon in the Diocese of Kigali that remained with you.
Oh, it was an astonishing experience for all of us. I don't think any of us remained dry of eye at this, because we met with Stephen Gahigi, an archdeacon in the diocese, one of the six archdeacons, and with another man called Matthias. And we didn't at first know who Matthias was. And the archdeacon talked to us about the impact upon him and his community of seeing the whole of his family murdered within the genocide. And this is a very common story we heard again and again around our visit. But he had seen his family wiped out, largely by one person. And the effect on him was, he just very honest about his life, tumbled into complete chaos, and his life just fell apart. But at the very depths, when he was, flat out, he had an extraordinary experience of God's love and forgiveness in his own life that began to put him together. And he knew deep down in experiencing the forgiveness of Jesus, he knew that there was something he really had to do, which was to seek out and forgive the killer of his family. So he sought out this person, Matthias, who was the other person meeting with us. And Matthias told his own story, but what was powerful was the interchange between them, with Stephen saying, forgiving somebody, if you've been forgiven by Jesus and you know that experience so deeply, when you come are called to forgive somebody, it's not good enough for a passing act of will. You have to take that person into your life. And, which he did.
I think while you were also there, you were asked to speak to a group of lay leaders about being both a disciple and a leader within the church, and how faith was not just something for Sundays, not a one day a week faith. What was your message to them?
Well, we were met with senior business people in the capital, and alongside a number of government ministers and other significant players in the life of the capital city and the country. And my message was rooted in thinking about our baptism, and how through our baptism we're not just, we don't just belong to Christ, we're commissioned by Christ to be witnesses and disciples for him. And that this is not just a Sunday activity, this is a whole week activity, This is an after Sunday activity, and particularly as I was addressing influential people in the lay people, it was incumbent upon them to be exploring how they could be disciples in the complex environments within which they move, to have authenticity and integrity around that, but also for them to recognise that as lay people they reach places and have influence that clergy could never have, and that they are ambassadors and pioneers in their very context to being about transformation. And of course, these people, I was talking to people who have already been key players in the transformation of their country and the building of a viable economy, but a viable economy and a polity for a country that is rooted in a sense of Christian forgiveness.
And you've been busy away from Rwanda too. You've recently written a blog on leadership and development and the training programs that have been taking place this year. What have your reflections been upon the first delivery of those in terms of the one for the deans, for greater churches, for bishops and the learning community?
I think that the first thing I'd want to reflect is that I rejoice that so many of the hopes that I had had for effective, focused training for colleagues and myself actually has come to be. It's been quite a journey. It's been a learning journey for all of us involved. But I think we can see the fruits that are real. I think that I think about the Dean's Programme. I mean, they've never offered training for deans before. And so we've had this mini MBA because it was particularly focused on supporting the deans. We know that deans are exceptional theologians and liturgists already. What we were picking up the deans really wanted and needed was support in being also the leaders of medium-sized ventures, which involves large budgets, the management of teams, effectively managing a communication strategy, as well as galvanising hundreds of volunteers. And we wanted to provide a programme which actually scratched where they're itching, and I think we did that. And the feedback from the deans was to say, even those who had been sceptical to start with, was, this is extraordinary, this is exactly what I've needed. And I think that their feedback has been such that other deans who didn't sign up last time all want to do it the next time. And we've got follow-up plans to support deans in their team building with lay and ordained colleagues at their cathedrals. I think that's a really exciting development. As in a new departure for us. I think we've also had, or in the middle of, a very, very good programme for 18 suffragan bishops at the moment in the middle of a programme. And they've also been saying, some of them have been saying, well, this is the best piece of training or intervention I've had since I was a curate in the 1980s. A real excitement where you've seen, or have been reported to me, fellow bishops engaging with this and saying, now, gosh, now these insights I can apply directly into my own both personal, professional and theological context. And it's been people having, I suppose, one of the things through it all that I've been trying to encourage is for us to be at least bilingual, for us to be thinking about working through our own proper theological paradigms, but at the same time being open to another language that's teaching us about how to value better and to have more insight into the systems, structures and communities within which we lead. And the insights that are being gained from what our suffragan colleagues are enjoying at the moment will be directly applied to the training programme for me and other diocesan bishops in 2016. And I think the point about all of that is that we're trying to get this into the bloodstream of training and development for all those who not for people to be heroic leaders of any kind, but for effective leaders of teams of clergy and lay people who are going to be even more effective in encouraging all of us at every level, particularly the parish clergy and their people, to be engaging in kingdom work, that is both evangelism and the service of the community, for the sake of this nation.
You've talked about, on the blog, the first fruits of this programme. What would you hope the longer-term fruit, perhaps more slowly gestating?
Well, that's, I think, because I think that's where what we've described as a learning community comes in, because I think when I've been involved in any engagement with any secular learning or leadership programme, everyone's been astounded that I've got to where I have with so little training for the responsibilities that I exercise. And I think that the advent of the learning community, which has its launch and is meeting with Archbishop Justin in September, is providing rigorous theological, spiritual, organisational and educational support for clergy who are already exercising considerable responsibility and who may well be exercising a variety of really influential ministries into the future. And we want them, we owe it to them to support them, but this is just the beginning, because this is not just about a small group of people, however sacramental that may be about the future. This is about building an environment in which, in the future, we'll be releasing opportunity and funding for the more effective development and training of senior lay leaders. And, of course, we want this to have a direct impact on, you know, as bishops themselves are trained, on how they will be advocates in their diocese for a much more focused and generous approach to training and development for parish clergy.
The blog is available now on cofecoms.tumblr.com, and both links featured this week are available in the description below for SoundCloud listeners. That's it for this week's podcast. I'm Aaron Arora. God bless you, and thanks for listening.